Guardian Unlimited.
The Guardian podcast, sponsored by Volvo. The all-new Volvo C70 invites you to feel. It's time to open up and see life in a different light.
I'm Michael Hann. I'm delighted that we're joined today by Nick Rhodes and John Taylor of Duran Duran, who've come in to discuss Only After Dark, their compilation of the songs that inspired them all those many years ago when Duran Duran were a twinkling in pop's eye and later to develop into an even greater twinkling in pop's firmament. Now, how did you come to the music that you've compiled on this album, Nick?
Well, when John and I were growing up in Birmingham, from the age of about 10 or 12, we were pretty obsessed with music. And it was early 70s, so obviously there was a lot of great things around. Glam rock was just starting to happen. You had T-Rex and David Bowie and Sparks and Cockney Rebel and Roxy Music. And then after that, we went through the punk rock experience, which was running alongside disco. It was a pretty inspiring time. And we wanted to be in a band from when we were kids. And we listened to all of this stuff. And by the time I was 16, 17, we'd formed Duran Duran, John and I. And I got a job DJing at the Rum Runner Club, which was, well, it was the most happening place in Birmingham at that time. And I started playing all this music that we loved, mixed in with all the new things that were coming out at that time, things like the Human League and Simple Minds. And it was a really potent mixture. And when we were on tour about a year ago, John said to me, "Hey, I've had this CD made up of the tracks, some of the tracks that you used to play. Check this out." And we listened to it and we said, "Wow, they sound astonishingly good." And it's a really eclectic mixture. And so we chatted about it and said it would be nice to put together a compilation just to let other people that weren't around during that period see how different the music was.
I remember, from giving away my age here, I remember, I think on Swap Shop, John, you saying that what you were trying to do was mix the Sex Pistols with Chic. And in a way, this music on this album, it sounds like that. It sounds so current now with all the 18 and 19-year-olds kind of bringing back the post-punk sound. Do you identify with what they're doing as well? Does it remind you of when you were young?
Well, yeah, I mean, that was... I remember that moment. It was like... that was a spiritual experience for me. I was in a pub in Birmingham and I heard back-to-back on the pub jukebox, I heard the Sex Pistols and then I heard Chic. And I thought... And I said to whoever I was with, I said, "Wouldn't it be amazing to get both of those sounds, you know, in the same band?" It's funny. Nick talks about how I remember it quite differently. I mean, we'd not been playing together for a few years. You know, I left Duran Duran for a while, and actually, when we got back together, I mean, one of the first times we got back together, we started making a list, actually. of all the songs that he used to play. And it was like I felt it was almost like a little game that we were playing that was just keeping us amused while we got on with the minutiae of, like, okay, well, how are we going to get the band together and how are we going to make it work again? And I think we had about 40 songs to begin with. But, I mean, it was a very exciting time for us. I'm sure, you know, if you were to collar any sort of 17-year-old who is deeply into music in this country today, they'd say how great the music scene is right now. But I think historically everybody knows, you know, that 1977 in England, the Sex Pistols and the Clash particularly, created something that, you know, was, you know, probably one of the most important popular music movements of the 20th century. And I think by 1980, the influence of technology was playing an important role, and kids like Nick and I, who were inspired to form bands by the Sex Pistols and the Clash, found ourselves listening to more technology-driven music that was coming out of Europe, Kraftwerk, Daniel Miller working in London, you know, so there was that. It was that sort of clash, that moment where the two sounds were clashing, and you know, we weren't the only people that were aware of that. I think
let's have a piece of music. What we'd like to kick off with first?
Let's start with a track by the godfather of the whole scene, David Bowie. he was the one that sort of managed to ride it all out, because when punk happened, it really wiped out most of the music that came before it. It all seemed unimportant. But somehow Bowie went off in a completely different direction. He made the Low and Heroes albums. And this is a track from the Low album, which still sounds pretty amazing today. Always crashing in the same car.
Every chance that I take.
David Bowie playing Always Crashing in the Same Car from Low. Now, who liked what stuff in the band? Were you into kind of different music? Did you bring slightly different things to the party? Was the one punky person, one arty person, one dancey person, or?
Yeah, well, Nick and I were cut from the same cloth. You know, we were glam boys, and we got on the punk train together. I think when we met Simon. You know, Simon, he was the same kind of, you know, he come from the same kind of place. He'd been into sort of poetic progressive stuff, but then punk had come along and changed everything for him. I mean, the first day that I met Simon, we talked about Simple Minds and their new record, and that we both found it interesting. And Roger, we met, he was a little more advanced than Nick and I. He was playing in a punk band in Birmingham that was actually pretty good. And Roger sort of he was just telling me recently, Rat Scabies from the Damned, he used to do this thing where he used to get up in the middle of the show and challenge anybody to get up and play drums with the band. And Roger, who, if you met him today, you'd never believe it, Roger actually said, "I'll do it." And he got up and played drums with the Damned at Barbarella's. Andy was coming from a slightly more hard rock background. I mean, he was from Newcastle. So all the influences that we got in Birmingham, I don't think they made it. I don't think they had the NME. They didn't have the NME in Newcastle. They just had sounds. You know, when we were reading Nick Kent and Charles Shawmurray, Andy was reading Tony Mitchell, you know, and there was a place for that, and Andy's had a knowledge of jazz chords and blues that was actually what we were looking for in the band.
And were there certain songs, Nick, that to a man you all loved, ones that, you know?
Well, I think again that David Bowie and Roxy Music were really the central hub of what we could all agree on. I mean, Andy always liked AC/DC, which I found terrifying, but somehow it worked. And when he plays those sort of riffs, as John said, it brings a different energy to the band. But the Velvet Underground, certainly Simon, John, and I liked, and probably a few more of the glam rock things, maybe things like Cockney Rebel. And the Sex Pistols, for sure, and the Clash.
Did you go and see those bands when they came to play in Birmingham?
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
I mean, what was it like? I mean, what kind of people went to those shows? I mean,
the Clash shows, which we all saw quite a few of, were pretty remarkable. I mean, they were just a great rock band, full of energy. They looked great. Had some interesting support bands too. We saw them with Suicide supporting them once, who got bottled off. Which was a terrible shame. I remember being very disappointed because we really loved that first Suicide album too. The Sex Pistols I saw a couple of times, not with Glenn Matlock, actually with Sid. And I was very, very young, so I was actually a little terrified of the audience, because it was pretty out there. Everyone was pogoing and spitting and jumping on top of each other. And at one stage, I remember it was a small club, and they'd actually formed a human wall, and they were holding to the ceiling, so no one behind could see. So somebody, of course, pulled down the wall, and it fell, created a sort of domino effect. It was pretty different though back then.
And what kind of place, John, was the Rum Run? I mean, it's one of those places that's kind of passed into legend. Birmingham's version of CBGB almost, but
well. You know, Nick and I, we had a vision for our band, and we didn't want to go down the route, you know, that anybody else was going down. And I think that was also a hangover from the punk years, and you know, the Sex Pistols and the Clash. You know, looking for places to play that were off the beaten track, that were not typically, you know, pub venues, that were not band venues. And we'd played a couple of arts lab kind of gigs, and. And we the Rum Runner, I mean, we knew that the Rum Runner was having, I mean, the Rum Runner was like this old club. It was like an old gangster. It was featured in the BBC series Gangsters in the 70s. And it kind of had a bad reputation, just had an iffy reputation, not the kind of place anybody would think about of going, anybody cool would think about going. But they started doing a glam revival night. So, and the posters were pretty cool. I think it was called Golden Years or something. So we thought, well, what about checking this place out? So we went up there in Broad Street, and they'd, you know, we didn't know this, but Paul and Michael Barrow, the guys that were running the place, they'd been to New York on a fact-finding mission, you know, to get some inspiration for this club that they were running, and they'd come back and covered everything with Miraflex. So you'd be walking along Broad Street, you know, past the furniture store, and then there was just this, like, there was this entrance, and it had this mirror and this pink and blue neon sign across the way. And so you'd go through there, and then you'd walk down this alleyway, and you'd go in, and it was very dark. There was sort of red velvet everywhere, and this, you know, this Miraflex, and there was palm trees, And we just showed up one afternoon and you know, took our tape, you know, to see if we could get a gig there, and if they were interested in putting on live music. And so we met the Paul, one of the brothers, that day, and Paul said, "Well, let's go downstairs and have a listen to this tape then." And we went into the club, turned all the lights on, and I must say that they took the sound system very seriously in the club. It was an amazing sound system, and you know, played these demos that Nick, Roger, and I had just done, and you know, he said, "Well, you know, have you guys got a manager?" And you know, we'd really, I'd like to get involved, and that was how, you know, that was how we got involved with that.
Let's hear something else from Only After Dark, the album you've compiled. What would you like us to play now?
Well, this next band, actually, Simple Minds, I think we're way ahead of their time then. This album is taken from Reel to Reel Cacophony, must have come out around 78, 79. And they were really one of the first, along with Ultravox, to fuse rock music with electronics. And it sounded very, very modern. In fact, it was one of the ones, particularly this track, The Changeling, it was one of the ones when John and I listened to the whole album that we'd put together, we thought this one sounded pretty remarkable, not just the song, but even technically. It's such a great mix, so here you go, Change.
Yeah.
by Simple Minds, which appears on Nick Rhodes and John Taylor's Only After Dark compilation album of music from the late 70s and early 80s, the music that they grew up with in Birmingham. Now, one doesn't think of Birmingham as one of the great hothouses of creativity, but I'm going to introduce you guys. What else was going on there then? Were there a lot of bands like you who didn't quite make it to the same level that you did?
I mean, there's always bands that do and don't make it from cities around Britain, but actually, I do remember when we were rehearsing at the Rum Runner Club, next door to us was UB40 rehearsing, and then just a little bit further down was Dexys Midnight Runners at the same time. And, I mean, obviously all incredibly different, but they both did okay too.
I mean, did you feel that you were part of a scene there? Did you feel you were quite on your own in what you were doing?
I think when we first got involved in the punk scene, it was the Prefects. They were the Birmingham band, Robert Lloyd's band, that we would follow, that we would go and see, and they had a very strong character. They weren't the Clash, but they played with the Clash. You know, they weren't one of the big London bands, but they had a strong character, and you could get attached to them, and you could go and see them.
Well, it was the night he had a shave on stage, yeah. Wasn't it? That really sold us on him, I think.
Yeah. You could go and see them every couple of weeks, and there was something happening. You could see the band evolve, and then the next band, the local band that Nick and I became attached to, were called Fashion. And they're sort of unsung heroes of the Birmingham music scene.
They were really ahead of their time too. Their main creative guy Mulligan, he was going a very different direction. There was a lot of reggae in it. I suppose around the same time as the Police, maybe a little before. They'd buy a synthesizer, so we'd go and see them, and then one week, and then the next week they had a synthesizer. So, oh wow, that's different. Look, it sounds different, and you'd hear it not working quite right on stage because he hadn't got to grips with it yet. And then the week after it'd be better, and that was fun.
I'm still slightly picking myself up off the floor from hearing members of Duran Duran name check Robert Lloyd, but one of the things I think that comes through on these records is the kind of freshness, the experimenting with sound. I mean, with the technology that was coming through then, I mean, I guess it's almost analogous to the sampling technology of a few years back. You can hear people wanting to make new sounds. Did you get excited about, Nick, were you with a synthesizer in front of you going, right, what can we do?
Yeah, I mean, it was the ultimate inspiration. It was around that time that synthesizers first became affordable, because before that there was the big old Moog synthesizers and ARPs that were used by the techno bands.
Note that he says Moog.
I didn't know that. Yes, that's the on the muso correct pronunciation.
Well, I mean, you know, he deserves it. Respect for Robert Moog. But those bands that were using those things, they were tens of thousands of pounds then, and completely inaccessible for us. But then this little thing came out called the Wasp, which was really the first little plastic synthesizer that actually sounded pretty amazing. And it was a couple of £100. And so I knew that's what I wanted, and we sort of saved up and got this thing. And it opened a whole different world. And these bands, certainly what we just listened to a little earlier, Simple Minds, and certainly a lot of the other things on the compilation were really early synthesizer hybrids with rock music, or in the case of something else that's on the album that I don't know whether we're going to get to today, but I Feel Love by Donna Summer. I mean, that's just an extraordinary record that Giorgio Moroder made with synthesizers. It was one of the first things I ever heard, along with Kraftwerk, that was purely made up with synthesizers and voices. And so it was an exciting time, and we knew we wanted that to be part of our sound.
Well, let's conclude the first part of our Duran Duran podcast. We'll have the second part next week with another piece from Only After Dark. Well, what would you like to finish off today with?
Punk rock was the catalyst, and it drew so many people into its web, and people that wanted to be creative, that wanted to make music. And it was pretty clear by the end of 1977 that the idea of the three-chord song, with the sort of anti-monarchist lyrics, weren't going to take you very far. So it was very interesting to see, people moving into new realms of music. And Howard Devoto had been the original singer with the Buzzcocks, and he'd left. And the thing he came out with next was Magazine, and that really shocked everybody because A, they had a keyboard player, and B, they used disco drums. They had a black bass player. And the first song from that album, from the Real Life album, was Shot by Both Sides.
This and that they must be the same. When it's big balls, just what's real. When it given to understand, it's exactly what I steal. I want my way into the heart of the crowd. Wear my way into the heart of the crowd. I was shocked to find what was allowed. I didn't lose myself in the crowd. Shot, shot, by those sides. On the run to the outside of everything.
Experience a whole new driving reality for yourself. To see the all-new Volvo C70, visit www.volvocars.co.uk.
Guardian Unlimited.